This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
4 minutes after 12 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where I'm going to buy a book about Elon Musk and read a lot more about him. I can't remember the last time I did an hour of radio. You can tell how unprecedented that was because I'm completely distracted from the beginning of Mystery Hour. I can't wait to find out more about him. He sounds like an absolute legend. But I digress. It is now Mystery Hour, your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial, or indeed on your internet-based listening facilities. The way it works is pretty straightforward. You ring in, you ask a question, someone else rings in and they have an answer. And that's it. Don't be silly. I mean, you know, if it's a really obvious question, then we've been doing this for 100 years. Doing it so long, we've got a ball game on the horizon, that the likelihood of someone never having asked that before is pretty low. However, my memory is also pretty low, so you might be able to smuggle one in. And if you hear somebody else ask a question you know the answer to, ring in and answer it. There's only really one big rule. Don't look stuff up. Just be silly. I mean, obviously, it would be silly. You hear someone ask a question and you think, oh, I'll Google it and ring the radio. This is a celebration of knowledge. It's about, oddly, talking about the internet and space and technology in the last hour, it's about just a little marker every week to remember what life was like when you didn't have the sum total of all human knowledge in a device you can hold in your hand that's thinner than a cigarette packet, smaller than a cigarette packet, and can contain, or at least can access, the sum total of almost all human knowledge. Almost every book published you'd be able to find if you knew where to look. I mean, it is incredible. But when I was young, and when many people listening to this program were younger, you needed to know stuff. The benefits of knowing stuff are changing. They're diminishing daily. I still think the power of memorizing poems is a thing of beauty, but that's more for emotional and cultural reasons than it is for beneficial or intellectual reasons. But knowing stuff. One of my nephews the other day, he's got a really good knowledge of capital cities. And as a kid, I remember I used to really pride myself on trying to memorize capital cities. And then, one for the geeks, the first computer program I ever wrote on a Commodore PET. And I've got to tell you now, I would not be able to do this now. I wish I'd stayed with that side of things. Was just a question and answer program on capital cities. So you once you'd written the code, would it be called code? I mean, it was basic, wasn't it, on a Commodore PET? Once you'd written it, you could just add in the country and the city. So it was, you know, by the end of the term, it was huge. I think I won a little prize for it. But oddly, I mention that because by writing that, in a way, you do away with the need for the knowledge. It's there. The knowledge is in the program. Even if it's testing you, the knowledge... I'm getting a bit carried away. I think it's the Elon Musk effect. Should we just get going with Mystery Hour? I think we should. 7 minutes after 12 is the time. If you're new to it and you're wondering what the hell I'm babbling on about, plus ça change, then just give yourself 10 minutes, get an idea of the flavour and decide if you want to join in. I'd warn you that it's tough enough getting through to this programme at the best of times these days. Not always. You'd have had a good chance in the first hour, actually. You'd have struggled in the second hour. But this hour is, you've really got to be on your toes. 7 minutes after 12 is the time. Lee's in St. Albans. Lee, question or answer?
I've got a question, please.
Carry on.
Why are we born with different blood types?
It's a nice question, that. Why do you want to know?
Why do I want to know? I don't know. It cropped up in a conversation with me and my partner the other day, and he said, oh, that's a good one for Mystery Hour.
Yeah, how many are there? I mean, we've got A-O-A-O, is it?
It's three or four, isn't it, I think? But, yeah, why do we need different types?
Well, that's not the question that you asked, because we might not need different types. Why do we have different types is the question that we will get an answer to, I think. What's the sort of evolutionary explanation for different blood types? And it may be that we need them, that the species would be massively weakened if we all had the same blood type. I do not know, but I shall find out for you. I like that one. Why do we have different blood types? 0345 606 0973. John's in Bristol. John, question or answer?
Question, James.
Carry on, John.
Okie doke, mate. When you're frying eggs,
yeah,
and you crack the egg into the pan,
yeah,
the yolk goes all over the place. It can go to the edge of the egg or to the end of the end of the white stuff.
Yeah.
But if you shake the egg hard before you crack it into the pan, when you crack it into the pan, it centralises the yolk in the white.
Shut the front door.
It does it, and I've seen James Martin do it on his cooking programmes, and my old lady, my mum, used to do it when I was a kid.
Well,
I've done it all the time, and if you don't shake the egg, the yolk can got a mind of its own.
Well, I've just in time for me turning 50. On the, I can't believe how many eggs I've fried over the years, and I never knew. And it drives me potty sometimes because I think with quite a fresh egg, with a thicker albumen, you're more likely to get it just to settle naturally in the middle than you are with a much runnier egg. Yeah. But if you're making a sandwich, John, and the yolk is at sort of, you know, northeast, you need it in the middle. Otherwise, you get a soggy corner,
and it runs all down the side and over the plate. And over the floor, and you've got to blame the dog.
Unbelievable! You end up licking the plate and all sorts inappropriate behaviour. And that's true, is it? Is it foolproof? I mean, every single time.
There is, damn it! Yeah, it seems to work almost every time. And I've seen James Martin do it.
He knows what he's doing, doesn't he?
And he shakes the egg and cracks it, and then he gives the cameraman a sly look.
Every single time. Just let me check with the team. Were you aware of this, Keith? Have we heard of it? Well, I'm going to work on the proviso that you're telling us the truth.
Oh yeah.
And then we'll need to. I mean, it sounds as if you're centering it in the shell, but that wouldn't make sense. It would still slide off all over the place, wouldn't it, afterwards?
No, the only time it hadn't worked is if the egg's about 5 months old.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't want to be eating that anyway.
But you wouldn't then, would you?
No. Does it thicken up the albumen, giving it a shake? It might do. So what you've got is a separation of egg white inside the shell, and when you shake it, it mixes the egg white back together again, so the overall egg white is thick, but then... And it goes in the middle because of the way you crack it. It doesn't, like, gravitate towards the middle. It goes in the middle because it comes out last.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. We'll find out.
Oh, I don't know.
It might be magic. No one might know. Or there might not be anybody who does know. Or no one's ever actually worked out how. It's the kind of thing Elon Musk could start getting stuck into. 12:11 is the time. Blood types and egg yolks. It's all to play for. Ashley's in Bognor Regis. Question or answer, Ashley?
James, how are you doing, mate?
Very well, actually. Thank you. Carry on.
Okay. I was hoping you were going to ask me back. I was going to say I'm out of this world.
Very nice. How are you, Ashley?
Oh, I'm very well, thank you. I'm out of this world.
There you go. Got there in the end. Question or answer?
Right, this is a question.
Yes.
Right, I see it this morning. I need an answer.
Yes.
If you jump on top of a train when it's moving, you land in a different space. Or not a space. I didn't mean to continue that from the last hour. So you land on a different spot.
What do you mean you land on a different spot? You mean you're on a bridge jumping on top of a train?
No. You're on top of a train and you jump. And the train's moving under you and you land in a different space or spot.
Yeah.
When you jump inside the train, you land in exactly the same spot again. So why is it different when you're on top of the train to when you're inside the train? That's what I'd like to know.
Yeah.
So you jump on top of the train, the train's moving underneath you, you land in a different spot on top of the train.
Yeah.
You're inside the train.
You haven't tried that. I don't think...
I saw the question and I need the answer. That's what
But you've never been on top. You've never been on top of a train and jumped.
I'm assuming, James Bond has, but what I would like to know is why... I mean, I saw the question. I'd love to know the answer. If someone must have done it in this country somewhere...
You're absolutely right, aren't you?
It's normal physics, isn't it?
Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take two train carriages just to make it even more confusing. One of which is open. One of which has no lid, no roof.
You'll fall into it, won't you?
No, I know, but that's why I've got two. Keep up, will you? I've got one with a roof and one without a roof. And they're going alongside each other on parallel tracks. And a fella is standing in the middle of one, without a roof, and in the middle of the roof on the other one, and they both jump in the air. Are you sure?
But when you're inside the train,
I understand the question. I understand the question. Are you sure, though, if you jump inside a train, you land in exactly the same place?
I'm more than. I mean, if you jumped in an aeroplane, you're not going to land.
Could
at
it
the
be
back
wind?
Of an aeroplane,
could it
are
be?
You?
Could it be wind?
That could well be you know what? That could well be it.
I'll tell you what, Watson. We've only gone and done it.
Well, do you know what? I think wind's a good theory, but I don't think it's the answer, James. I think there's another reason here.
Yeah,
I think
it does feel a bit inadequate, doesn't it?
I'll leave it with you and your listeners,
but hopefully you can answer it. You know, I would now as well. Trains and jumping. So, speaking of wind, there was a report last week that they were They were delaying William Shatner's journey into space because of wind. And I did find myself thinking that was probably for the best, because it'd be quite a problem in that enclosed space, wouldn't it? Ba-doom, tish! Andrew's in Manchester. Andrew, question or answer?
Hi, James. I've got a question.
Carry on.
I have a cat,
yeah.
Oscar.
Yeah.
And of a morning, I'll go downstairs, make my coffee. And while I'm waiting for my coffee, I'll sit down on the couch with him and I'm wearing my dressing gown.
Yeah.
And he'll jump on my lap and sort of pad with his front paws, you know, press down one after the other on my dressing gown.
Yeah.
And he seems to be really enjoying it. He's very, he's almost in a trance while he's doing it. And I don't know what's going on there.
Is he doing a sort of, is it a substitute for sharpening his claws?
No, his claws,
so his claws are in.
No.
His claws are retracted.
They are.
Well, he's
no,
getting.
They're, not.
They're in. His claws are in. They're not out.
His claws are in. Yeah.
Well, he's getting so his pads are there. He's rubbing his pads on your dressing gown.
He's almost walking.
Yeah,
with
he's getting, and it only happens on your dressing gown, not on anything else.
Perhaps if I wear, if they've got a towel and blanket, for example.
Yeah,
but if
it's
I was
the
wearing
texture.
Jeans, he
no,
wouldn't be doing
no,
it.
No, it's the texture on his pads. It's like a pleasure.
Absolutely,
it's a pleasure. But, it's a pleasurable experience. Cats are dedicated to pleasure. You know this better than I do. Just think about what Oscar does all day. All he does is pursue pleasure, Andrew. And this is pad-based pleasure.
I just wonder what, you know, cats in the wild. Were they just doing it for pleasure then? Or is there some sort of evolutionary reason why they
chase? Oh, yeah, why does he do it? Why is it so nice? Well, you need to have sensitive pads for all manner of, you know, evolutionary reasons, so you don't step onto burning hot things, you know, so that you don't, so you feel pain. So the more sensitive your pads are, the safer the cat will be. And
that's true.
And an upshot of the sensitivity is a pleasurable feline frisson that runs through Oscar when he stimulates his pleasure points on his pads with the toweling texture of your robe, I would imagine. But I suspect you would be forgiven for not taking my word for it.
It sounds convincing to me. If there's a cat equivalent of Dr. Dog, then
Dr. Cat.
I'd love to hear it.
Nurse
yeah,
Cat.
Do.
Dr. Dog. Yeah, I like it. Love to Oscar.
Yeah.
Mind, there you go. 12:16 is the time.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
It's 19 minutes after 12. Blood types, egg yolks, jumping on trains and cats kneading with a K. Answer any of them or indeed ask a question of your own. 03456060973 is the number you need. Tom's in Cardigan in Wales. Tom, question or answer?
Oh, hi, James.
Oh,
yeah, it's answer. It's about the guy stood on top of a train for some obscure reason.
Yes. It's not an obscure reason. He's escaping from
Smursh. He kind of answered it.
Right, go on.
The only thing that would be from not landing in the same spot would be wind resistance.
Are you there? I thought you'd fallen off the train. Are you still here?
I'm hearing two things at the moment, yeah.
Well, what's the other thing you're hearing?
Well, so you know, it's like saying that if you know, the world's spinning at however many... Yeah.
No, you've got something wrong with your phone. God knows what that is. Seriously, wasting all that money on space travel. We're going to give Tom the round of applause, so get him back up, but don't take any more answers to that question. Danny's in Worthing. Danny, question or answer?
Hello, James. This question, please.
Carry on.
Well, seeing as you enjoyed the last hour so much, I'm going to take you back to space.
Okay.
My supervisors are bugging me at work to use all my annual leave. And I'm wondering when to use it if I were to look to go into space, particularly to the moon. Is there a good season to go? Is it warmer? Are there seasons? When's best to go? My wife's a school teacher, so we was actually watching for holidays.
Have to coincide with Christmas, Easter, or summer. I mean, if it's a vacuum or largely a vacuum, then there's not going to be temperature changes, is there?
I don't know. There isn't.
I'll tell you that.
I've got bigger problems. This time last week, I was worrying about a seven-legged spider called Stanley.
Oh, is that
week,
you? Did we get an answer?
Yeah.
We did get an answer. Has he come back? Has he come back?
No, he hasn't.
There you go. We scared him off. Doesn't like being talked about. That's what
it
was.
Yeah, he got shy.
So the moon. So are there seasons in space is how we'll do it?
Yeah.
Are there seasons in space? I'd be surprised, but yeah, I mean, you never know. The darkness, does it get... Why am I even trying to think about an answer to that question? The likelihood of me accidentally stumbling upon one is absolute zero. 21 minutes after 12 is the time. Thank you, Danny. Back to Tom. Where were we, Tom?
Hi, James. Yeah, it was an answer. It was the guy stood on a moving train, yeah. Jumped up in the air. And I think you kind of answered it as I was calling in. He would land him back in the same spot because he'd be moving at the same speed as the train when he jumped, yes. And would carry on moving generally at the same speed. So he would land back in the same spot other than a little bit of wind resistance.
Yeah. So the higher he jumped, the more wind resistance would kick in.
Potentially. But there's also a scientific problem. I'm not sure if it applies because you're in the envelope of the train. So potentially the wind moving around the train would not cause that resistance. There is a problem that's been posed around, I don't know why, but it's chickens in a lorry.
Oh, yeah.
And if all the chickens in a lorry jump up into the air, does the lorry weigh less? And apparently it doesn't. It continues to weigh exactly the same amount as all the chickens in it because they are part of the envelope of the lorry.
Right. So air displacement then, in a way. So if you think of everything inside the lorry as a solid block,
exactly.
Then the weight wouldn't change. Yeah. Oh, I like it. Qualifications?
I'm a chartered engineer.
That'll do nicely. Round of applause for Tom.
Thanks, James.
No, thank you. Luke's in Bromley. Luke, question or answer?
James, it's a question.
Carry on.
We are all surrounded by these. There's one right in front of me now. It's called a microphone.
Oh, yeah.
Invented in 1861.
What was it?
What on earth did people do before that to be heard in crowds? I'm talking about maybe... if there's like a little concert thing, or maybe if you're, you know, speaking to a lot of people,
they just
somewhere.
Had loud hailers.
They had what?
Big funnels. That would be it.
Was that it? Are you sure?
Yeah, positive.
I mean, so war when there's like thousands and thousands of people, they'd use those little.
Yeah, I'm 99.9% sure I'm right on this, so I'm probably going to give myself a round of applause. But just out of interest, and because I find this kind of stuff fascinating, there's a theatre in Greece called Epidavros. Have you heard of it?
I've heard of that, yeah.
If you stand, there's a metal sort of point in the middle of the auditorium in Epidavros, where the stage would have been. And the way that Epidavros is built... You stand in the middle on that spot, and in my case, you get your children, or you do it the other way around. The children stand, and you go right to the back, right to the top of the banked seating in the auditorium. And the way it's designed, it's like you're in a bell, and so the voice carries quite incredibly. The acoustics, even though it's outdoors, work in such
like
a way.
Like St. Paul's Cathedral.
Unlike the Whispering Gallery or St. Paul's Cathedral, that kind of acoustic design.
But I'm talking about.
No, I know what you're talking about. You're talking about a fella giving a speech in front of 4,000 people without any electronic amplification. And the answer is there wasn't any electronic amplification.
I guess you just had big lungs as well, right?
I guess so. Big town criers would practice their projection. Oh, yay! Oh, yay! That kind of thing.
A lot of shouting, wasn't it? A lot of, people wouldn't hear.
Yeah, well, that's why microphones are such a good invention, Luke.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, to think no one was releasing songs or doing radio before then because there wasn't any microphones.
Well, they'd be doing songs, but you'd have to... So I went to see Phantom of the Opera the other night and I still can't... I still find myself thinking... What year did you say, 1861?
Yeah, well, that's the first one. I mean, they came out in 1870-something.
So there is no way that when they... when the music halls were in full swing and when they were doing sort of Gilbert and Sullivan stuff on the stage at the Savoy, there's no way that would have been amplified. Whereas now, you go and see Phantom of the Opera, which is the first time I've seen it, believe it or not. It was the 35th birthday on Monday night. One of the best nights out I've had in a very, very long time. But I still get slightly peeved by the fact that it's amplified, by the fact that they're wearing microphones. Because a little bit of me thinks, from my days as a teenage thespian, you should be able to fill the auditorium unamplified, you know, like a kind of Brian Blessed type performer.
Yeah, I know in the Bible, like, when you spoke to the 4,000 people or whatever, it was like...
5,000.
There's a 4 and a 5, there's 2 dots.
Oh, is that right? I've got deflation.
Yeah, there's two different things.
Fair enough. No, but that would have been from
that was in the valley.
There you go. You've answered your own question. So I don't know. Maybe there was a precursor to the microphone that you and I are both unaware of. In which case, I shall hand back my round of applause. But until then, I think there wasn't anything before microphones.
So for thousands of years, they used to use those rolled up things.
Yeah. Not just rolled up things. They'd used valleys and auditoriums that were specially designed and other sort of acoustic tricks or But yeah, you would have, you wouldn't, there was nothing electronic, there was no electronic amplification before electronic amplification. There was no electronic amplification before microphones, I don't believe.
It's a reverse speaker, isn't it, basically, a microphone?
Yeah, it's got that vibrating diaphragm or whatever.
You've got a little microphone in front of you, haven't you?
I've got a very big microphone, thank you very much. But size isn't everything, Luke. Round of applause for me. Have a great day. Thank you, mate.
Cheers.
27 minutes after 12, Nick's in Wood Green. Nick, question or answer?
It's an answer for you, James.
Carry on, Nick.
It's the question about the cat paddling on the dressing gown.
Yes.
So basically, when as a kitten, when they're suckling from their mother, kittens will actually do that exact same movement in order to
squeeze the milk out,
encourage more milk.
Yeah, of course they do. They milk their mums, not to put too fine a point on it. Don't they?
That's the way it goes.
That's the way
so
it goes.
Obviously, the memory of the soft and furry thing, and that's why the cat's in a bit of a trance, because it's, you know, going back to childhood.
So it's a sort of reflex almost of comfort and niceness. So Oscar thinks that our caller is kind of his lactating mum.
Yes, so he's been very affectionate, and he's bonding with him, and it's a lovely thing all round.
That's lovely. Is it qualifications?
Well, my girlfriend is a veterinary nurse, and she specialises in feline behaviour.
Isn't that nice?
She helps people who have cats that are a bit weird.
Oh, that's interesting. Our cats are all right, actually. The dog's a bit weird, but the dog's been at my mother-in-law's for a few days. And I have to tell you, the kitten, or she's an adolescent now, was so excited when the dog came back. It was really sweet to see. It was like the kitten was dancing around the house with joy, and the dog was quite pleased to see the kitten as well. It's the old cat that doesn't really get on with either of them, but it's a funny old world.
Well, cats have a very strong sense of possession of territory, and the dog is supposed to be there, and when it's
not,
there's something wrong.
That's right, that's exactly what it was like. The little cat was over the moon, whereas the older cat was there before the dog or the kitten, so their sense of territory would have been established. Oh, blimey, you live and learn. Round of applause. Well, Nick, you need to pass it on to your girlfriend, really, don't you? I mean, or at least share it.
So I'm merely the conduit, James.
You are a vessel. I shall leave it in your... I shall entrust it to you in that case. I shall
you
not
bet.
Give it. There
you
we are.
Me.
No, thank you very
you.
Much. Good man. Lovely stuff. 29 minutes after 12 is the time. So we've done that one. Are there seasons in space? We've done that one. We've done that one. The egg yolk one is great, if true. We've got no reason to doubt it. It's been on the telly. You give an egg a really good shake before you crack it into a frying pan, you're almost guaranteed to get your yolk nice and central in your fried egg. Why? 0345 606 0973. And why do we have different blood types? Should I do the number again, just to take us bang on the 12:30? 0345 60 60 973. And now here's Amelia Cox with your headlines.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 60 60 973.
It is 12:33. Mystery Hour continues. 0345 60 60 973 is the number you need if you wish to join in. Recap on the questions shortly, but there's only a couple left on the board, two or three. So if you can bear with, we'll get some more up and running as well. Stuart's in Barnes. Stuart, question or answer?
Quick question, James. Good afternoon.
Yes.
Basically, I was having, my missus is about 8 months pregnant now.
Oh, yeah.
And you give a tummy a little rub and a little tap and what have you. Hmm. And it just occurred to me that is the sound magnified in the womb, like you would your head underneath the bathtub, for example? When it's filled up with water and you tap the side of the bath, it's really magnified, like a fish tank sort of thing,
we
know.
Yeah.
Now, is it the same for a baby? Would the sound be magnified? And could they hear it just as loudly? Because, I mean, because you think about it...
In the amniotic fluid?
Yes, yes.
They can definitely hear, because my oldest, if we went to the cinema when Mrs. OB was... pregnant later in her pregnancy, she hated it. She'd start kicking like you wouldn't believe, and right up until the moment when we left, there's something about the bass in a Dolby cinema used to get right up her nose.
Yeah, I know you can actually hear. I mean, because babies can hear like from quite an early age, as we know, whilst in the womb. but it's that magnified sound of you actually tapping on the stomach while it's in the womb. Is it magnified the same way as you would be if your head was underneath a bathtub of water?
Yeah, okay. So is sound magnified in the womb, really? Is magnified by the liquid in the womb, is the question, by the fluid in the womb? Is it your first baby?
No, it's my third.
Oh, okay. So that's why you've started wondering about stuff like this then, instead of focusing entirely upon the joy of a new life.
It's like, for example, I mean, because the doctors or the midwives, they can actually hear the baby's heartbeat, and they can hear it quite loudly through the ultrasounds and or stethoscopes before, obviously, ultrasound was invented. But so, therefore, if it's magnified in that sense, would it not be the same in reverse?
Yeah, I'm only going to let you have one question.
Well, it's really the same question.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought as well. So that's an uncontroversial decision by me then. Good luck with the new arrival, Stuart. There you go. 12:36 is the time. Marco's in Cambridge. Marco, question or answer?
I have an answer about the precursor to the microphone.
Okay.
So, as an activist, when you're in a group with an audience that's larger than the original speaker, can hear, what you'd normally do is that the speaker would say a few lines, and then the people closest who can hear it would repeat those lines all in unison. And then maybe if the group's too big, a second group would repeat it again. So it passes on. And it's posited by people like David Graeber that this must have happened for thousands of years for larger groups as a convenience.
So it'd take a while to deliver a speech then?
Yeah, it would take longer.
So it's like a relay. It's like a sort of pass it on type scenario.
Yeah, but it is quite effective in terms of getting larger groups to hear what you're saying.
If it's a massive group, it would be, wouldn't it? The bigger the group, the more likely this would be. So what sort of gathering on that kind of scale, I wonder?
Yeah, I mean,
Is there a name for it? Is there a word for it? Do we know?
Well, nowadays it's usually referred to as a mic check.
That's just to make sure the microphone's working, mate.
No. It's literally like to start one nowadays in protests and stuff.
Right.
The person speaking will shout mic check.
Yeah.
And then everyone will know to shout mic check back to affirm that they're going to start repeating whatever that person says.
But they don't, if they haven't got a mic.
Yes. I know it's a weird name, but that's usually how it goes.
Fair enough. So it's like a human microphone.
Yes.
Okay, I quite like that. Qualifications?
Activist and fan of David Graeber's work.
And it still happens?
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, at gatherings where there's no amplification, I just can't really think of any. Any old Tom, Dick or Harry can get a loudhailer and an
Extinction
electric.
Rebellion does
do they do it?
Quite a bit, yeah.
They still do it. They're sort of human pass-it-on type mode.
Yeah.
I like that. So that's a really nice answer. Yeah. I know nothing about David Graeber, as I demonstrated on the programme not long ago, to the delight of some of Jeremy Corbyn's...
He's worth checking out.
No, I know he is. I absolutely, I've checked him out a bit since then, but he's not with us any longer, is he? I think he was at LSE when I was there, but our paths, I never was lucky enough to be taught by him. You certainly get one of these. It is 12:39, and Rebecca is in the Cairngorms in Scotland.
Hello, James.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well. I'm on my honeymoon.
Oh, in the Cairngorms. How lovely. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
A sign that... I don't know whether this is a good sign or a bad sign that you're on the phone to me.
It's a really good sign.
Good.
We're very happy.
Good.
But we were driving along, listening to you, and I suddenly wondered, why is a honeymoon called a honeymoon?
I know this.
Do you?
Yeah, I do.
Do you really
know
it?
Yeah, just bear with me. Right, the first thing is mead, which is booze made out of honey, right?
Yes, okay.
And the second thing is obviously to do with the moon. No, don't laugh. The honey bit's really strong. The mead, so you drink the mead and then...
Yes.
The idea is that you have conjugal relations at the time of the month that is most likely... to result in a pregnancy.
Oh,
and that is measured by one moon cycle from the time of the marriage. So the honeymoon, you're getting, I don't know what you've been up to in the Cairngorms, but you have been... Well, I think I do now. I think you, so there's been.
I'm blushing.
So stop it. So drink has been taken, and
yes.
and also, you know, you've got a bit more time on your hands than you do not on your honeymoon. So the likelihood of a conception is increased during that period. One moon cycle and lots of mead being drunk equals honeymoon.
This is fantastic. It is,
isn't it? No, I'm really pleased. What's your husband's name?
My husband's called Henry Goodfellow.
Oh, look at that, Mrs. Goodfellow. Congratulations. How about it?
Thank you so much.
No, congratulations to Henry, Rebecca and Henry as well. A round of applause for both of them, please.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much. When are you back? How long are you away for?
Oh, we're only away for a week.
We'll make the most of it. Do enjoy yourselves.
We will.
That's lovely. Thank you for sharing that with my listeners and with me. That's a lovely moment. 12:41 is the time. Reg is in Barrow-in-Furness. Reg, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
How far can you see? When you look into the sky at night time, looking at the stars, how far can you actually see? Are you seeing for millions, billions of miles, light years, whatever? Or can you just see a certain distance and the rest is some sort of an illusion?
That's an... Yeah, I mean, so stars are so far away. Oh, this is the second brilliant sort of head... playing with your head type question of the day. Oddly, the one jumping on the train question didn't turn out to be quite as... They never do they? If there's an answer to the question, it's never going to be quite as magical as the question was in the first place. So you can see things that are miles away. And it's partly to do with light, isn't it? And
yeah. Are you actually seeing that distance, or
you must
I don't
know. Be? You must weird. Be seeing it, or are you seeing a reflection of it, or
I don't
whoa!
Know.
What a great!
You
question.
Can only see so far into the horizon, and
yeah,
it's just nothing there. Then,
how far can you see?
Yeah.
With the naked eye.
Yeah.
So we need an average, obviously, if you're short-sighted or long-sighted, so we don't need any pedants. How far can the naked eye see? I like that a lot. Thank you, Reg. That's a nice one there. I think I've got a feeling we'll get an interesting answer to this as well.
Thank you.
No, thank you. 12:43. How far can you see with the naked eye? And in the context of looking at the sky in particular, or looking into space, to take us back to the last hour, is the sound magnified in the womb by the fluid, by the amniotic fluid? Another kind of spacey one, are there seasons in space? And the egg yolks and the blood types haven't gone yet. I thought they'd have gone quite early. Why do we have more than one blood type as humans? And why does the egg yolk stay in the centre of the egg if you shake the egg vigorously before cracking it into pan? Rich is in Nottingham. Rich, question or answer?
Hello, James. How are you doing?
Very well, mate.
I've got a question.
Bring it on.
What? So you have... the Middle East, we're in the Western world. Is there a place in the world where East meets West and West meets East, and what determines those points in the world?
There is, actually, yes. Would you believe?
Is there?
Yes, it's in Turkey. It's the Bosphorus. The bridge over the Bosphorus is widely regarded as being the bridge between the West and the East. I mean, certainly it's between Europe and Asia, but that is what the Bosphorus is sort of historically renowned for.
Right, I didn't know that.
The Straits of Bosphorus. I don't know how I know that either, but it's filed away somewhere in the old memory banks, which is what Mystery Hour is all about.
So what is it What is it about that area in Turkey that determines that's the place that...
I think it's... Is it a whole isthmus? It splits quite a big landmass square down the middle, so it just conveniently... lends itself to the idea that the Western world is on one side and the Eastern world is on the other? I don't know. You've got... I don't know. I've answered your question, so I'm taking my round of applause. But why...
Okay.
Whether you begin to track physical differences there in terms of complexion or in terms of appearance, I do not know. But I'm fairly confident in the classical world, Constantinople, as it was, is the kind of gateway from east to west and west to east.
Right. Well, that's my question answered. I'll crack on with my day. Thank you very much, James.
Thank you very much, Bob. Mind, Rich, I beg your pardon. Mind how you go. 12:45. Oh, round of applause for me, please. It's 12:45.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
It is 12:49 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. We'll just hopefully cross off a few more of these, but as Wayne in Basildon has already suggested, it doesn't look like we're going to clear the board today. But that's the nature of mysteries. Some of them are unsolvable. Andy's in Romford. Andy, question or answer?
Hello, James.
Hello, Andy.
All right. The Seasons on the Moon.
Yeah, that's not the song, is it?
No. Well, let's start off with Earth. Earth is tilted on its axis.
Yeah.
So as it travels around the sun, there'll be points where the northern hemisphere is closer to the sun.
Yeah.
Which is our summer. And then as it moves around, it moves further away from the sun, which is our winter, and obviously summer in the southern hemisphere.
Yeah.
That goes for everything that's tilted on its axis as it orbits the sun. They'll have the same sort of seasons.
So in terms of light, length of days, more than anything temperature-based, you would have seasons in space if the body was tilted on its axis?
Yeah.
Is the moon tilted on its axis?
Yeah, it's 5 degrees.
Is it? So, there are seasons on the moon, but it will be more in terms of diurnal length than in any other measurable meteorological phenomenon.
Well, the diurnal length is one rotation around that axis.
Yeah, so that will change according to seasons.
The
amount of time it takes.
The axis would stay the same, but obviously depend on where it is on its orbit of the sun.
Yeah.
It's what season it's in.
Now, what I've done here is a very important lesson for younger listeners. I've tried to sound like I knew what I was talking about, and I've ended up more confused than I was before I started talking. So I was actually in a fairly good place, thanks to your quality answer, but in a fairly pathetic attempt to sound like I was in on the answer, I've now confused myself more than I was before. So the answer is yes, there are seasons in space.
Yeah, and any other planet which is tilted on its axis.
I should have left it there, Andy. That's what I should have done. Qualifications.
I got a degree in geology and physical geography.
That'll do. Nicely done.
Thank you.
No, thank you. Lovely stuff. Thank you for being gentle with me as well as I made a slight fool of myself towards the end of the conversation. Anthony's in Truro. Anthony, question or answer?
Hello, James. I've got an answer.
Carry on, Anthony.
It's the answer to do with the baby in the womb question. So we need to strip back or go back to basic physics before we crack on and answer the question. So effectively, when you tap the womb, what you're doing is creating an impulse of sound energy, or energy, actually, not necessarily sound.
Yes.
But by transferring from a medium, from air, obviously on the outside, to a liquid on the inside, the amniotic fluid in this instance, you're changing the speed of sound from outside to in. So yep. What sounds like a light tap on the outside becomes, on the inside, it sounds different because the frequency, you know, bass or treble and all that kind of stuff, the way we hear it is dependent on the speed of sound of the medium that you're listening to it in.
So it will be seen louder.
So coming back to physics and the classic Newtonian principle, you can't necessarily, energy is moved from one state to another, but it can't necessarily be created. So the energy which you put into the amniotic fluid by tapping the skin would never be greater than it is at the point of entry. So it can't be magnified because there's no means to magnify it. So we would normally use a speaker, for example.
Well, then why is it louder in the bath?
So it's an interesting principle because it's not necessarily that it's louder, but it sounds different in
And a baby in the womb will only know what sounds like in the womb. There'll be no comparison
exactly.
With being out of the womb. So it's a no.
So it's the change of state between...
Yeah, that makes it sound different in the bath. So that's where the question came from. But the answer is actually, I mean, that doesn't admit the parameters of the question because you will only ever hear what you hear in the womb through the amniotic fluid. Qualifications?
I work in the field of acoustics. I've got a degree in the physics of sound.
Oh, how exciting. Have you ever been to Epidavros?
Sorry, say that again.
Have you ever been to Epidavros?
I have not, no.
You should do. You'd love it, man. It's this theatre where the Greeks designed it in such a way that you can hear a whisper or a pin being dropped in the middle of the stage from the back row.
Oh, well, that's right up my street.
It's
then,
really, I was thinking, but, it's right up your Strasse. I'm going to give you a round of applause. Yeah. I'm going to try and squeeze in a couple more answers before Sheila time.
Thank you.
Hang on. Matt's in Birmingham. Matt, question or answer?
Answer.
Go on, then.
So it's for the how far can you possibly see?
Yes.
So there's a theoretical maximum that you could ever possibly see, and it's known as the observable universe. So the universe is about 13.
Yeah, but with an eye, with a human eye, Matt.
If there's something bright enough that was 13 billion light years away, you'd be able to see it.
So it is about how it is about how bright it is.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, the more bright something is, the further
away
you can see it.
I mean, if it is bright enough, you could see anything if it was however
no.
far. No. What's the limit?
The limit is this 13.8 billion years.
Right. Oh, okay.
Because the universe is 13.8 billion years old.
Yes.
So something that happened 13.8 billion years ago.
That's when Steve Allen started at LBC.
It's taken 13.8 billion years for the light to reach us.
Yeah.
There's something that happened longer ago than that.
Right.
The light can't have reached us yet, so you could never have seen it.
There you go. So that is the limit.
13.8
billion light years away, you could see, theoretically, if it was bright enough.
Yeah. Yeah. So we think the universe is infinite, but we have the known universe or the observable universe, which is only as old as the universe is.
13.8 billion.
Because we just can't possibly see further than that.
Qualifications?
The light hasn't reached us yet. Space enthusiast, lots and lots of YouTube videos, and A-level physics.
Nice one. No, well played. So, and you a round of applause.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The egg yolks one is the one I really want the answer to. I know all this clever stuff is brilliant, but I'm going to test it when I get home. What am I having for tea tonight? I might have eggs. What do you normally have with fried eggs? I like a bit of gammon. Chips. And chips. 12:56 is the time. Steve's in Chesham. Steve, question or answer?
I've got an answer, James.
Carry on, Steve.
Right, the answer to where does east meet west?
Yes.
This is going to be a bit technical and nerdy. But
well, it's only going to be moderately technical and nerdy because you've got 1 minute.
No, not
exactly.
Too technical.
Yes, go on.
Not too technical.
Okay.
So as you're aware, the Greenwich Meridian goes through Greenwich, which is 0 degrees.
Yes.
As you start going east from Greenwich, you start measuring your coordinates in degrees east.
Yes.
And if you start going west from Greenwich, you start measuring your coordinates in degrees west.
Oh, I see what you mean. But that's not what the questioner was after.
Are you sure?
Yeah, positive. He was talking about the Eastern world, not the compass points. He talked about the Middle East and the Far East and then the West, and when does the West become the East? And a nice answer to that is the Bosphorus, the Straits of Bosphorus.
Fair enough.
Istanbul, which was Constantinople. And if anyone else is thinking of they might be giants, when I say Istanbul was Constantinople, they get an extra prize today. I'm giving you a round of applause because you're a nice bloke and you meant well.
Well, if you did want the geographical location, you'd have to go...
Laurent is in Greenwich. Laurent, question or answer?
Yeah, hi. It's just...
Why are you doing it? Why are you putting through Meridian Greenwich stuff? The question was about when does the Western world become the Eastern world?
Yeah, and the answer to that is on each side of the meridian line.
You're not getting a round of applause because you don't mean well. I'm having that one back. Alan's in Lightwater. Alan, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Honestly, I just can't get the staff, Alan. I can't believe it. Go on, quickly.
So we've got four blood types.
Why?
There are antigens on our blood types that we see.
Yeah.
If you don't have an antigen, you're blood type O. If you do, they're categorised into A, B, A, B.
But why do we have more than one? Why don't we just have one blood type?
Because in 1937, when they looked under a microscope, they saw different types of antigens and they had to label them, which is the reason why when we have hemorrhage...
But why do we have different antigens?
The reason why is because once they looked at them under the microscope, they had different
types.
This
is chicken and egg.
Yeah, so you have to treat them differently.
No, I know that. I know that. And I know you're a doctor and I know it makes sense, but that's not the question. The question was, why don't we all have the same blood type?
Because if we did, then we wouldn't really evolve from our parents. It wouldn't work because we get each one.
That'll do. Don't quite get it. Sounds clever. Finally, Adrian in Grenoble. Chicken and egg to egg. Question or answer?
Yeah, it's the answer. No, it's quite simple. It's just like stirring a cup of tea. The liquid on the outside is going to go faster than the liquid in the centre.
Yeah.
So it tends to force a heavy object to the middle.
Yeah, that's
what
I thought.
When you put cream in a cup of coffee, that's what happens.
Yeah, so this is...
No credentials, grammar school in Aylesbury, and even the teachers weren't qualified.
Have you done it yourself? Have you vigorously shaken your egg before cracking it?
I haven't actually, but I'm going to do it.
Report back.
You learn something.
Report back, because we can find out whether it works in France and England at the same time.
Everything works in France, it's just England, it doesn't work.
Round of applause for Adrian, yeah, like everything else. We're not going there. If you want to get the yolk in the middle of your fried egg, if you shake the egg vigorously before you crack it into the pan, then you will have a much better chance, if not a foolproof opportunity, to have a centralised yolk.
I'll have a go.
Yeah? Let me know.
I will.
Because I might not have fried eggs tonight. There's a bit of a run on gammon in our house. That's it from me for another day. We'll do it again tomorrow from 10. Here's Sheila.